radio listener parties are back this summer.
Bringing together the greatest music and the greatest people. Join your hosts, Colm and Lucy, along with your favourite station presenters for prizes, karaoke, finger food and drinks.
Getting the gang back together this summer in Cork, Galway, Limerick and Dublin.
For details, stay with the home of the 80s and 90s, Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Treat yourself to a touch of luxury at Kinsale Hotel and Spa Cork. Book your overnight stay in one of our newly refurbished deluxe rooms and you're guaranteed to be impressed. Sleek modern styling, contemporary spaces to sit and relax for business or leisure while taking in the stunning views over Oysterhaven Bay. A getaway at Kinsale Hotel and Spa is a unique experience, one you'll treasure forever. So book your luxury break today at kinsalehotelandspa.ie.
The Mallow Garden Festival, one of Ireland's largest home and garden festivals, takes place on May 24th, 25th and 26th.
There's over 200 exhibitors, 25 super show gardens, free gardening seminars and view over 5 million plants on display, plus a vintage car show, artisan food expo and pet show.
The Mallow Garden Festival, May 24th, 25th and 26th. Free bus service from Mallow train station daily. So join Peter Dowdle, Pádraig Corcan and their team at Cork Racecourse Mallow, 11 to 6 daily. It'll be blooming great.
You're listening to Nighttime Talk
with Recruit.ie, Ireland's new online job search. Search for your dream job today on Recruit.ie.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio. Nighttime Talk. Call us now on 0818 942 105.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Hi, I'm Megan Scully, and this is Crack August Kjol on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Imi Baltana, Milaniga Shaska Do, Han Marilyn Monroe, Happy Birthday, Mr. President, Egbrella Uchtron America, John F. Kennedy. Imi Baltana, Havilas Atridig, V. Spostra, Chris Hadfield, Isbos, August, Hanshe, Space Oddity, O David Bowie. And I'm floating in a most peculiar way. In Havilas Ashoft, host Amy Winehouse, Blake Wilder in Miami. Imi Baltana, Mila Nigat, Nora Hoft, For Share, August Sunny, Railed, Erin Hollywood, Walk of Fame.
That's Crack August Kjol on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Across Cork, Limerick, Clare and Galway.
On your phone.
And on your smart speaker.
This is the home of the 80s and 90s.
This is Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Good evening, I'm Aidan Delaney. The Minister for Integration says the government wants to see decisions on migrant applications made much faster. Roger O'Gorman says he hopes that tighter requirements will process applications within a year. Meanwhile, it's expected that planned cuts for migrant payments will be presented at Cabinet tomorrow. Minister O'Gorman says applicants need to move through the system more quickly.
Much of this is linked to the Asylum and Migration Pact, which will put much tighter requirements in terms of processing on all EU member states. But we want to see a first instance decision within 6 months. You know, hopefully within a year, the entire process has gone through. That's what we should be moving towards. And that will move people through the system much more quickly. We won't have a need for such a large amount of accommodation because people will be told yes, no, much more quickly than is currently the situation.
A UN staff member has been killed and another injured after their vehicle came under fire in Gaza as they were travelling to the European hospital in Rafah. Secretary General Antonio Guterres has called for a full investigation. His deputy spokesperson confirmed the security personnel killed was an international staff member, marking the first such UN death in the Gaza conflict. New planned laws to increase the legal age to purchase tobacco will save the next generation from smoking. Cabinet is set to back new legislation introduced by the Health Minister Stephen Donnelly, which will make the sale of cigarettes to under-21s legal. The bill will not affect those currently 18 and over, who now are legally entitled to buy tobacco. And Dublin City Council have voted to grant a 250-year lease for Tulca Park to Shelburne Football Club. It follows a long-standing campaign from fans to ensure the stadium remains in the club's hands. There were plans for Shells and neighbours Bohemians to enter into a ground share proposal in Dalymount Park, but that was shot down by officials in 2022. In a statement, the Save Toka Park campaign thanked the council for the decision and says this is a win for the people. And that's your news for now.
Ireland's weather.
With McCarthy Insurance Group. For better value, home, farm, motor, life, health and business insurance in 2024. MIG.ie.
A mix of clearer spells and isolated showers for many tonight, with cloud building and top temperatures between 6 and 10 degrees. You're up to date to the home of What Did Lucy Kennedy Say to Colm Hayes? Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Now, Nighttime Talk on the home of the 80s and 90s.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
You're very welcome back to the final hour. I can't believe it's into the final hour already of my first night on Nighttime Talk on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio. My name is Lauren O'Sullivan. I'm standing in tonight and tomorrow night, and you've been so good to me so far. I'm having a ball. And I really want to hear more from you. This has been a lot of fun and a lot of interaction. So in this hour, if you want to get involved, the text number is 087 188 0008. And I said just before the news, what I want to talk to you about now is a bit of death. Let's talk funerals and planning funerals and what you do when someone dies. Because look, unfortunately, death is part of life and it's something we all have to face. It's like really cheerful music in the background. But it is something that we all have to deal with. And I personally think we do death quite well in Ireland. Like, I think death is very much celebrated as a part of life. And, you know, I have a lot of family in the west of Ireland, and I've gone to many a wake and many a really good session when someone dies. So I think in general, in comparison to other countries maybe around the world, I think we really embrace death and we're okay about talking about death, but maybe not as good as we could be. So I want to hear from you tonight. You can text 087 188 0008 about conversations you've had with your loved ones about what you would like to happen should you die, and maybe what your partner might like to happen or your family members might like to happen, because unfortunately these aren't our conversations that we don't always have with our loved ones, and then something might happen suddenly and we don't know what to do. So get involved. Let me know your thoughts. There's a few brilliant texts already coming in. I saw during the news someone wants Highway to Hell played as they go through the flames of the crematorium, stuff like that. And I think you do hear those kind of quirky stories, but I suppose for many of us, we have lost people in our lives. Like, I lost my mum really suddenly, and I didn't really know what she'd want. Myself, my brother and my dad were like kind of picking music, being like, yeah, she loved Rod Stewart. Like, let's play a Rod Stewart song, you know, kind of thing. We never talked about it. And it's okay to have these conversations. Uncomfortable conversations are called uncomfortable conversations for a reason. I'm going to bring a friend of mine on the show with me now. Her name is Sinead Hingston. And I'm delighted to have her on air. And she's the first person I thought of when I thought we'd be talking about death today. Hi, Sinead.
Hi. I don't know what that introduction is like.
Death fans. But Sinead, look, I've known you a really, really long time. And we'll kind of talk a bit about some of that as we get through the conversation. But for people who aren't familiar with you, you're not just my friend coming on the radio for a chat. You're also a mum, a parent. Sorry, yeah, a mum, a wife, a sister, a daughter. You're a widow, which you're going to tell us about. And you have quite a large Instagram following, over 23,000 followers. And a lot of that has come because of you having these uncomfortable conversations on your platform and talking about grief and death. And recently you shared photos of your husband's funeral. Tell me about some of the reaction to sharing those photographs, Sinead.
So I just put up a reel. Like, I'm very much of the mindset of, like, I just want people to feel more comfortable in uncomfortable conversations. And the more we talk about these things, the easier it is to talk about them. And a friend of mine, a really dear friend of mine, who is also now no longer with us, didn't tell me she was doing this, but she actually took photographs throughout the day of my husband's funeral. Like, to me, I was completely unbeknownst to me, but obviously other people could see her doing it. And she didn't give them to me for a couple of months after the funeral, and they are just the most, I don't even know how to describe them. I absolutely love them, and I know that might sound so weird to people, but I have very little recollection of that day. I can remember snippets of the day, but seeing the photos and seeing the people that were there and just little snippets throughout the day, they just mean so much to me. I share the real, I would share things every now and again, you know, about living with grief and the journey and how hard it is and how difficult it is to do. And you kind of, you're expected very much to suck it up and get on with it. And that's just life, and we're all dying. I mean, there's no getting away from that. But we live in quite a harsh world when it comes to living with grief. You know, we're not very soft with people who are doing it or trying to do it. It's like, at times, debilitating. It's, you know, it's really hard to do. So I kind of like every now and again to share snippets of what it's like. I got a very mixed reaction, and I haven't shared all of the photos. I mean, a lot of them I would never share. And the few that I did share are quite respectful, I feel. I've, you know, cropped them, but there's not other people in them. And, you know, but it's a funny one. Like, a funeral to me now, like, when I look back, I was 30 years old, you know, we had just got married. I was having to plan.
Well, let's go back in time to that, because I mentioned your Instagram following, and you know, you've spoken so beautifully and so honestly throughout your journey. But I suppose where we are now, I mean, this is going right back to July 2011. So for those who aren't familiar with your story, who maybe don't follow you on Instagram or haven't heard you interviewed elsewhere, Sinead, what happened to you and your husband in 2011?
We were, I'm not trying to like make this short, we got married in December 2010, we got pregnant in April 2011, and in July that year we went on holiday to Portugal. Thankfully we actually went over with my parents, and Jeff's dad was with us as well. And on the day that all the parents were due to go home, we were to stay on an extra week. We went out on an organised boat trip. The boat anchored, and they were bringing people in and out of the caves at the Algarve coast, and Jeff jumped in for a swim. Something happened to him in the water, and in less than a minute, he was gone. That pretty much sums up that kind of day. I was 19 weeks pregnant at the time, and it was all very surreal. I still, like, I can tell the story now as if it happened to somebody else. I think I'm so used to talking about it and telling it. And, look, my world, when I say it turned upside down, I can't even describe that fully in words, because we had nothing. We had, you know, we had no savings, really. We had just got married. We had that little bit of present money that we had. You know, we had no life insurance. We had no house. We were renting in the UK. We were both self-employed. There was no lovely pension. It was all very scary. So I moved from London home to Dublin. I'm back in with my mum and dad, with my dog, my gorgeous Kobe at the time, and pregnant with Miss Lily, who's now 12. Very, very scary times. There was no Instagram back then. I think I had posted maybe one or two photos of life back then. It wasn't really a thing. Mm-hmm. But over the years, I have gotten so much out of sharing my journey. And you know, as you say, like, people follow you because they can relate, or they need to kind of connect with somebody else who's been through hell, or just in some way, shape or form understands, I suppose, what they're going through. But looking back now, talking about funerals, like, I had absolutely no idea how to plan a funeral, let alone my husband's, when I was 30, you know. And I was a crazy hormonal person to throw into the mix as well, being pregnant. So I just...
Had you ever had a discussion about what would happen if one of you was to die? Had you ever talked about the music you would like?
Joked in the sense that, you know, I had always said to him, if you go before me, I'll be right behind you. And I can tell you honestly now, Lyle, the only reason that I'm still here is because I was pregnant with Lily. Like, I can put my hand on my heart and say that, because I wouldn't have survived that time without that focus, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm.
But we never talked about what would happen. Now, his mother had actually died quite suddenly in the January. So we had been on honeymoon in the January, and his mum had passed away 6 days after we got married.
Wow. Oh, my God.
Or 8 days on the day after we got married. So we I suppose in a way, we just obviously just been to her funeral in the January. So we linked in with the same funeral director, Crins in Glasspool. They were just incredible. Like, they, you know, it's like they knew us all, if you know what I mean, from that had only happened a few months before. So I think in a way that kind of helped me, because there was a lot of familiar faces walking in the door and having to plan everything when we got home from Portugal.
You also had this journey home. Like, you didn't just have to do the usual, like, you know, wake, removal, funeral. Like, you had to bring him home from Portugal. So that in itself must have been quite an ordeal, and you're trying to process everything. Can you remember at any point when you started thinking about funeral arrangements, or was that, did people, like the funeral directors, just say, listen, you pick a coffin, do this, pick a song here, do that, you know, did you have much personal input?
I do remember doing a lot from Portugal. I have a terrible dark sense of humour now, by the way. Just thought I'd throw that out there in case anything gets played on this live radio show. But I do vividly remember sitting on the terrace of where we were staying, on my dad's laptop with this floppy dongle thing hanging out the side of it, and a PDF of various different types and colours of coffins that was upside down. So, like, we couldn't figure out how to rotate the picture. It was like, when I look back, it was like something out of a comedy, like trying to select a coffin for a 37-year-old guy that kind of looked funky, but didn't look too funky because, you know, that's not very traditional. And, you know, just the things that, like, I was like, well, I don't want, like, brass handles, like, that's really old fashioned. I want something a bit funkier. And it was all,
yeah.
And you're quite restricted. Like, you want to do all the, I wanted Kobe at the funeral and I wasn't allowed to have
you
him
mentioned Kobe, your beautiful husky. Aww. So yeah, and that's something you hear people now saying, like, having pets at funerals. Kobe wasn't allowed.
No, he wasn't allowed in the church. I was in there and we got married a few months before and he wasn't allowed, and I kind of thought that they might give way the day of the funeral, but he wasn't allowed either. So, like, you are, as much as you like to think that you can do whatever you want, if you're having a traditional Catholic funeral, you are restricted in what you can do in ways. I mean, there's obviously lots of flexibility in other ways. But, you know, I think traditionally, I think the funeral itself was quite a traditional funeral. We had him at home. So we were in Portugal. It happened on the Sunday. And we finally got him home on the Thursday night. And I'll never forget it. Like, he flew home Aer Lingus. That was another thing. I was like, you can't fly home Ryanair. I remember being on the phone to the travel insurance going, I don't care
who
he flies home from Portugal with. It just can't be Ryanair.
Okay.
And he got him home with Aer Lingus. And it was just, like, from the moment we got onto the plane, we just felt like we were home, you know. It was just, they were so incredible. Like, I can't even describe it. They were just incredible. But yeah, then we were collected by the funeral directors at the airport, and we were brought out to Glasdoodle, and they transferred him from one coffin into the one that we had picked on this computer laptop upside down picture. And yeah, so it was all like, I mean, you genuinely just keep putting one foot in front of the other, and you're just carried by your family and your friends, like, literally. And you're making these decisions and, you know, obviously now I can look back and I can kind of process it a bit and be like, oh, I wish I had done that differently, or I wish I had done that. But in the moment, you're just floating through this nightmare, and you just hope that you get out the other side relatively unscathed, you know.
What would you do differently now, do you think?
Oh, I think I would have had the music much livelier. He was brought out of the church to You Raise Me Up, and I can't listen to that song now. I actually, if I listen to it, I heave crying. Like, I can't even catch my breath. And I just wish, I kind of wish I had made it more of a celebration of his life and not mourning his death.
But
you know,
it was
that kind
so
of way?
Tragic. It was
horrific.
So sudden. Like, how could you
so
not?
Horrific. Yeah.
And then I'm sure everyone is there staring at you, pregnant, like, not even sure what to say. Do you know, I think, like, to be fair,
yeah,
like, I said at the start of the hour that, like, we do funerals quite well in Ireland. But I think what I meant was, we do funerals of people, like, when it's their time, quite well. And we all go to the pub and we toast the person. But, like, a 37-year-old father-to-be newly married, like, how does anyone get their head around that?
Yeah, and I still can't. I mean, I still look back and go, like, what? Like, you know, we never really find out what happened. We think it was a jellyfish thing. Pretty sure it was. But, like, we'll never get full confirmation as to what happened on that day. And yeah, it's just so surreal. It just doesn't feel real. But then, yeah, like, little things like my friend doing that and taking the photos, like, all of those things.
When you saw those photos the first time, like, how did she tee it up, or did she just hand them to you? What was that like?
So she sent them all to me. She gave me a big email warning, and she had kind of said it to me as well, you know, I've taken these, you don't have to have them if you don't want them, but they are there if ever you want to look at them. And I was like, and look, I'm a photographer. Like, I absolutely love photos. I love photography. I love capturing moments. I am all about it. And I genuinely, and I know it might sound really weird to people, a lot of people think it's disrespectful. I don't think so. I think it's capturing moments. It's life memories. Like, this is a huge time in my life. But I as I said, the snippets of that day that I have a vague kind of memory of, but the majority of the day I haven't a clue. And things like, you know, who was there? Like, there was people spilling out of the church in Dundrum, you know, like people that said, oh, you know, I was at Jeff's funeral. I'm kind of looking up and going, sure, there were so many people there, I don't know. But these photos kind of give me a feel of how many people came to pay their respects and to say goodbye to him, and they're just really special. And seeing me and how I was and how I was, I mean, like this one, I think it's a beautiful photo of my entire family carrying me into the church. And it's such a powerful image of just how you need to be carried in those moments in life, you know. And it's very, very rare that we would capture them.
I absolutely love photos. And when you shared them recently, I thought, oh, wow. And I suppose, look, I know you and I know how special they are to you. But you mentioned you got quite a mixed reaction to the reel.
Yeah, I mean, some people just think that funerals are quite a, you know, private kind of, I don't even know how to describe it, you know. And in Ireland, we are quite old-fashioned still. Like, you know, as you say, like when people are older, you kind of, there's more of a celebration had, or there might be some, a little bit of Irish music in the pub after, or, you know, it's a bit of crack almost because you're celebrating this long life of somebody. But when it's a premature death and this person is younger and it's such a shock and it's so tragic and it shouldn't have happened and it's so unfair, you know, it's just different. It just sits different with everybody. Any funeral photos that I've seen, like obviously social media is such a huge thing now. Like the way it kind of forces these things on you, when you share one thing, then your entire search bar is full of it. Like there's so many beautiful photos out there of funerals and of celebrations of people's life, rather than, you know, dwelling on the grief part, which is also huge. It's a lovely, I don't know, there's some really tasteful images I think you can take. And you know, people are absolutely entitled to their opinions, and I do try and be very, like, I'm remarried now, you know, I have another husband, so I have to in my head be as respectful as I can towards him too and what I share. And he is, like, he's known me for years. He knew me before Jeff died, so I think he just knows what I'm like, as a bit like you do, you know. I like to talk about it, I like to discuss how it makes me feel, how life can be really tough, how you can live your life, but you can also struggle the whole way through. And yeah, you kind of have to take the good with the bad, I suppose, when it comes to social media. I am very lucky. I don't get an awful lot of bad messages or mean messages or anything like that. I think I've had maybe a handful, like not, you know, but I would obviously get people sending me an LDM saying, God, that's really disrespectful, or I can't believe you shared that, or that's a bit much. Or, you know, I'm like...
A bit much. That's such an Irish thing, isn't it? A bit much. It's a bit much when you do. You know, because you mentioned there, Michael, your husband, and how amazing he is. And, you know, he knew you. He knew who you were when he met you. And he has, you know, been an amazing partner, an amazing husband, and an amazing dad to you. And I suppose, look... This is the reality of it, is that someday you will die and someday Michael will die. And is it because you've been through a loss so huge? Do you have it in the back of your head? Like, I need to know what to do if he goes first, or does he know what to do if should you go first?
Oh, yeah. So I have my funeral, like, in the notes on my phone. I've sent it out to all of my family and friends so they know. I don't want anyone to wear black. I don't wear black that much myself. So I'm like, don't want you wearing black. Make it bright. Make it colourful. I want to be brought out to my way. Frank Sinatra.
Perfect.
Carried out to that.
Yeah.
You know, I very much wanted to be a shindig, like a good old celebration. Like, yeah, miss me, but don't miss me too much. I mean, I'm not all that, you know. Like, have a laugh. Take the piss out of me. You know, do all that after I go. But don't you know, and that's what I like to do for Jeff. Jeff was an absolutely, like, he was just an incredible guy. Like, you know, and everyone says, oh, people are up on a pedestal when they die. I'm like, no, he was on the pedestal before he died. Like, he was just a sound, lovely lad. Like, and I will always talk about him. I'll always, you know, mention him in conversations or, you know, look, Lily is the absolute double of him. Like, you've met her. She is his mini-me, spitting image of him. So many of his mannerisms. Like, he's here every day. And, you know, Michael and I have talked about what we would like. Now, him, not so much. He's like, I want to be cremated. So that's about as far as it goes.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, right, okay. I'll figure out the rest then. But no, I have definitely probably thought about mine a bit more.
I think you can't help, but if you've planned a funeral, I think you can't but help imagine your own to a degree, for sure. Because, I don't know, maybe we just have this morbid curiosity. That's why we're such good friends. But it's just, like, death is something that affects us all. Grief is something that we all have to live with at some point. Hopefully, you get through as much of your life as possible before you have to face it. But
without it.
But it is just something you live with. And you change forever. And I think it's something I probably thought about death before my mom died, but I definitely think about it more now because it can come for anyone at any time.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, one minute Jeff was here and he was swimming around in the water and he was chatting away to us. And then, like, no joke, within a minute, he was dead. Like, it was that quick and that shocking. And I'm horribly aware now that that can happen to any one of us at any stage. It can happen any one of my three kids. It can happen to Michael. It can happen to my parent. Like, I'm so lucky to be 43 and still have both my parents here. Like, I'm probably not in a nice way very aware of how quick it can all turn. And look, I've tried to have conversations with my mum and dad about what they want. So they're both in their 70s now. And I'm like, well, what do you want? Don't do this to us. Don't, like, there's four of us.
Mm.
And I'm like, don't let us guess. We'll just have arguments. Like, just write it down on a piece of paper and hand it to each of us or photocopy it or whatever. Stick it up on the fridge.
Mm.
But just don't leave us guessing, because it causes, also another point, a lot of arguments and a lot of confusion. And, you know, one person saying, would he really like that? And the other person going, I don't think he did. I don't think he really liked that. And you're just like, it's just not necessary. You can just relieve all of that extra pressure from the people who are left behind. When you go on ahead, you can relieve it and you can just help them out a little bit by planning a bit more before you go. And, like, why not do it? Like, Jesus, it's like organizing a party for yourself, you know? It's like happy days.
I heard of a man once, I think he was like someone's dad when we were in school, he was quite unwell and he had auditioned musicians in his room at the hospice. Like, he had people come and play for him and they didn't know what they were coming to play for. And
oh,
then
no
he was
way.
Like, oh, it's for my funeral. Like, their faces. So I think he kind of judged them on their reactions for that. But, you know, I think if you're sick and you're dying, I don't think anyone can judge how you deal in a scenario like that, you know,
know
what's coming. You mentioned there about some of the photography that you've seen online. And I've recently come across a funeral directors online that do kind of montage videos. So similar to like a wedding video to music, like I've got a video of my wedding and it's, you know, different snippets throughout the day to different songs that were played at the ceremony and at the reception. And this funeral directors, they do that. They kind of make a video of the day and show slow-mo. And I got in touch with them and I think they thought I was taking the mic when I said I was calling from a radio station, but I was quick to assure them I wasn't. I was genuinely interested. This is a conversation that I'm fascinated by, but it is available and you can get these videos done. But I just wonder, like, on the day, how discreet, like you mentioned your friend taking the photographs, but I'm thinking of like a video camera, like looping around the coffin as the family is standing there. Like,
I think you're so oblivious in the moment. I didn't realize that Shara was taking the photos. I never even saw a camera. Like, I think even my wedding photographer and videographer, I don't remember them being too in my face either. You know, I think you're just so in the moment on the day. It's not something you think about, and I think they are professional and they are discreet, and it's such a beautiful thing. It's such a beautiful keepsake to have after the fact, and especially for people that couldn't make it. you know, like.
Well, this is it. We watch webcams now. Like, we watch funerals online now. So why not have the montage video? I'm going to have to take a quick break. Sinead, I hope you stay with me. And I would love to hear from you. But we're getting some gorgeous messages in from listeners about, like, things they've thought of for their own funeral and conversations they've had with their own family. So if you've ever thought about your own funeral, do text, get involved, 087-188-0008. And how do you feel about the videos? For some reason, I'm a bit more okay with the photos than I am with the videos. I wonder what that's about. Let me know what you think. We'll be back very quick. This is Nighttime Talk on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Nighttime Talk. Call us now on 0818 942 105.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
The home of the Kim Wilde 80s Show. Weeknights from 6.
This is Kim Wilde, and if you love the 80s, you're going to love these next couple of songs I've lined up to play for you. From Paula Abdul. And the Human League are coming soon.
Monday to Thursday from 6 p.m.
on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
The home of the 80s and 90s.
Hello!
Hiya. I was just reading about that awful crash at the crossroads. It was Kate's son who was killed.
Oh, no.
The roads. So many deaths. Colm, look, I'm not nagging, but I've seen you flying up that road. Please slow down. Imagine it was your death notice.
Ma'am, it's grand.
I don't ever want the Gardaí calling here.
Chat to your loved ones about their unsafe driving today so you don't lose them tomorrow. A message from the Road Safety Authority.
Hi, Jennifer here from Two's Company, Ireland's leading dating agency. Are you fed up wasting time online, searching through countless profiles? Try a more personal and professional approach. Two's Company guarantee introductions to people who really want a relationship, people with a very high level of compatibility. So sit back and let us do the searching for you. See twoscompany.ie today. And remember, you're in good company with Two's Company.
You're listening to Nighttime Talk
with Recruit.ie, Ireland's new online job search. Search for your dream job today on Recruit.ie.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
You're very welcome back to Nighttime Talk on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio. My name is Lauren O'Sullivan. I'm with you tonight and tomorrow night, and I would love to hear from you. We're talking about your own funeral and plans or conversations you might have had with your loved ones. You can text 087-188-0008. Loads of WhatsApps coming in. Some funeral directors getting in touch. A few people saying that they love the chat. Who's this? Sorry, I can't see your name, but it's love to chat. Recently lost my mum suddenly. I'm so sorry to hear that. Always chat about my own funeral and my husband being a firefighter. It's healthy to speak about death. I feel like it needs to be a celebration of life on the day. There's enough time to cry afterwards. And sorry, followed up with another message from the same listener saying, I also lost my brother a few weeks after my mom. He had everyone up to the hospice, sit around and chat to a gang of his close friends and family to talk about him and hear it while he was alive instead of at his funeral. I loved it. Oh, that is so beautiful. And God, so much loss you have been through. Thank you so much for sharing that with us. Joining me on the line is my good friend Sinead Hingston Green, and she has been sharing her story and sharing her journey through grief and loss. If you missed the start of the chat, Sinead lost her husband, Jeff, very suddenly and tragically on holidays in Portugal when he was 37. She was just 30 and pregnant with their daughter, Lily, at the time. And just some of, I suppose, the shock of what Sinead went through is something that I think, Sinead, people have really been drawn to you over the years that you've been sharing your journey. Not just through this, by the way. I mean, you have many strings to your bow. You've had a lot happen in your life. But, you know, you're always so open and so honest. And I think, as you said at the very start, it's okay to have these uncomfortable conversations. It's part of life.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, you know, as you just said there, look at that, the journey didn't end there, I suppose. You know, when Michael and I were trying for baby number three, we had 4 back-to-back miscarriages. And I very openly, that was all through lockdown, I very openly talked about that as well. And obviously gained a good few followers through that because it just wasn't talked about. You know, you don't talk about miscarriage. You can't, you know, but God, that's so embarrassing. Like, you know, you just see, even in the hospital, you have it, you're given a leaflet and you're sent home. You know, that's it. There's no softness, there's no kind of protection after it, and I couldn't get over the amount of people that got in touch with me and still to this day send me messages about it. And I just feel like it's just so important to just change this narrative of it's not okay to talk about things, because it is okay. We're all going through various different things throughout our life, and knowing that somebody else is going through it, I don't know about anybody else, but it certainly helped me, and it's helped me realize that I'm not alone in the hell when you're in the depths of it, you know. I would have done a lot of Instagram lives as well throughout COVID, I suppose, on various different topics, and would have talked about miscarriage and fertility and planning your own funeral. Like, it's all there. It's all on my grid, I suppose, in COVID times. But again, mixed reactions, you know. Some people don't agree. Some people think that these things should be kept private, and these life experiences are very private experiences, and that nobody else needs to hear about them or know about them.
See photos of them. Like, I have had friends who've experienced baby loss and have shared photographs because, you know, of different stages, yeah. Whether it's them going through it, whether it's them sharing a selfie, whether it's pictures of the baby, you know, and people, like, it is so interesting to hear the different reactions, because as we said that term earlier on, it can be a bit much for people. We can't handle it.
Yeah. And I just think times are changing so much. I think social media has given us the space to be able to talk about these things more and share more. And in the beginning, like when I'd share something, you'd feel kind of a little bit removed, I suppose. You kind of post on your Instagram and then you get out of the app and you go about your life. But then, like, the connections that I've made through Instagram with women, they are incredible. Like, I've made friends through people that were able to, like Rebecca, like your friend that I met through you, like the amount of things that we could relate to with each other. And it was just incredible having her as somebody that I could reach out to when we were going through that fertility hell. Like, there's just, I don't know, it's just a different world now. I think 20 years ago, things were very different, you know. God, you'd never in a million years see somebody with a camera at a funeral. It just, you'd probably be removed from the funeral. But, like, you know, even doing things differently as life goes on a bit, like, you know, my Nana, when she passed away, I was adamant that I was carrying her coffin out of the church. And there was a lot of disagreement over it. And I was like, I don't care what any of you think. I will be standing up at the end of the funeral and I will be carrying her out of the church. And I did. And to this day, I am so proud I did it, because it just felt amazing, like carrying her on her last little journey, and it's just not done. How often do you see a woman carrying a coffin?
Yeah, when you started saying that there, I think Anthony Foley's sisters carried his coffin, or one of them did, maybe Rosie Foley. I can't, if anyone knows for certain, but I remember seeing, obviously that was such a huge funeral. And they were incredible images. Sinead, you mentioned there some of the connections you've made on Instagram and some of the Instagram lives you did through COVID. And one of those was with Stuart Collier. He joins us on the line now. He's a funeral director at Collier Funeral Services. Stuart, thank you so much for coming on Nighttime Talk on Ireland's Classic Hits Radio tonight. You're very welcome.
Yeah, you're very welcome. Thanks for having me on.
Stuart, to be a funeral director is... Right, this is going to sound like a strange question. Do you love your job?
Well, pretty much all the time, yes. I mean, there are days where you do question what you're doing, like. But I think anybody who loves their job probably has the same. Not every day is, exceptionally enjoyable. But, you know, helping people, kind of working through the most difficult times of their life, there is a lot of good that comes from that. But there are times where it can be quite difficult to help people, and at those times you do feel that you kind of question, oh wow, you know, am I doing the right thing in my life? But I have to say that 99% of the time I really do love what I'm doing.
Did you always want to be a funeral director? I mean, Collier Funeral Services, it's a family business. Did you have to be dragged into it, or did you always know you'd be involved?
I actually always thought I'd do something completely different with my life. But there was a load of different things that happened in my, late teens, early 20s. Like, I did start doing part-time work within the funeral business just to kind of see what it was like. And then, like most people, like, I finished college and then I moved to Vancouver and was kind of living out there. And I found myself just doing job after job that was basically surrounding people, working for people, you know, doing things that actually help them. And from there, basically, I just said to myself, do you know what? I may as well go home, give the family business a try, and, you know, worst comes to worst, I'll decide it's not for me, and then I could do something else. But now, luckily for me, it suited me, and yeah, I'm here. Well, I've been doing it since 2009 on a full-time basis, so yeah, 14 years, 15 years this year.
Who started the business, Stuart?
So that would have been my great-great-grandfather.
Wow, although, so well-established.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, this is kind of speaking at the time, and actually I heard Sinead speaking about the way times have changed and that you'd see, you know, ladies carrying coffins. And this is like in an era where he married into a family where there were only ladies who could have had the business passed on to them, which unfortunately wasn't exactly done at the time, which is kind of crazy. But because of that, my great-grandfather got involved in the business, and then...
Oh, wow, you know, that's what happened.
I'm now the fifth generation of my family involved in it, which is, I mean, it's kind of an unusual way to start kind of our name part of the business, but still I'm proud of what we've managed to do over the years.
Even in the years that you've been involved, have you seen much of a change in how people approach their funerals, really?
Yeah, huge. It's so when I started doing even funerals on a part-time capacity in 2005, most funerals often went to the church even beforehand, and they were followed by, you know, a mass or service the following day. And around sort of 2000, and actually around the time of the recession, things started to change. So you started seeing, certainly in our areas, so like we're obviously working North Wicklow and sort of Dublin area, and we started seeing a change in the way that people were wanting to do things. So we had less desire to go to the church the evening beforehand. Some people opting to use the funeral home that we have for, you know, an evening gathering of family and friends, or just choosing to have the person being brought home for the night before the funeral itself. And that's now developed to the point where, I mean, for us last year, you know, a quarter of all of our funerals were non-religious, which is quite a significant amount. And that's coming from, I'd say we would have done at one point in time, one or two funerals a year in maybe 2005 that was, you know, slightly different and maybe not involving religion. But now you're seeing a very quick increase in the number of different and interesting funerals people are trying to have outside of the different faith funerals.
What's one of the most interesting things you've been asked, or can you tell us?
Gosh, I thought I was going to get asked that question. Nothing comes to mind immediately. Yeah. I can't think of anything specific that like kind of was especially outstanding. But there was one funeral where the family chose to have an ice cream van outside the funeral home.
I love it. That's on my list.
Sinead, yeah. Put that on your list. Yeah. I love it.
I think the couple had an affinity with having the old 99, so
they
wanted to have one for everybody.
Amazing. That is brilliant. How do people react when you tell them you're a funeral director, Stuart, when you meet them first?
Well, I can tell you that, like, as when I was in my early 20s and I was telling people that was what I did, it wasn't exactly a great chat up line. but it has, like, I mean, to be honest, like, people do kind of react in one of two ways. They're completely shocked by the fact that I do this job, or they're completely interested and have a 1,001 different questions about what we do, which, I mean, I much prefer that reaction, to be honest. I like when people are interested in what I do and kind of want to know.
Yeah.
You know, I like it's great to be able to answer these questions, because I think for so long I always found that people found the subject of funerals a bit taboo and didn't really want to speak about it. And it's great that now it's actually a little bit more widely spoken about. And I really have to say, I really quite enjoy that that's the case, because if you have it as a non-taboo subject, people feel comfortable or more comfortable speaking about it. And then you can learn about all these different things that are available to you if that's something that you want. I mean, it's not knocking that. The church is still very much a thing for many folks, and I wouldn't want to be taking that away.
But, of course, yeah. You mentioned bringing people home, and Sinead, you mentioned you brought Jeff home. It was something in my family, like, we brought my mum home. It's something that I think happens an awful lot in, I mentioned my family in the west of Ireland earlier on, but is it something, Stuart, that people prefer to do nowadays, is to bring people home rather than have them in the church, say, overnight?
Yeah, so in our experience, more often than not, instead of people going home, they're often staying, like they're staying in the funeral home, so they're having gatherings in the funeral home, and that might be to do with, you know, space in the house or the desire to not have everybody coming to the home. But I do find it that in the countryside, I know it's still quite common to have people, you know, being brought home. We do it certainly. It's not something that's, you know, uncommon up here, but just it is less so than, you know, back years ago.
Is there there's rules?
Yeah,
around
I just
it,
didn't
isn't
want to leave him.
Oh, of course, yeah.
Yeah,
I like we had to leave him in Portugal. Like on the Sunday, we were forced. Well, we actually didn't see him for 2 days initially, but then we saw him for maybe I think it was about 5 or 6 minutes, and then we were told that we had to leave, and it just kind of kept happening. And I was like, you know what? The second I get him home to Dublin, he's coming home, and I'm not leaving him in a funeral home or in a church. He's just coming home. I just didn't want to leave him anywhere again. But yeah, it was really important for me to have him with me.
With going home, sorry, Stuart, now, if this, it could be a bit graphic for people, but you have to have certain rules, like from an embalming point of view, like that you can't have the heating on in the house, for example, if you've got a dead body in the house, things like that.
It's not necessarily the case that you wouldn't have to have the heating on, but I mean, it is probably not a bad idea to not let the temperature in the room be too warm. So certainly, you know, if you're coming into summertime, that would be something that would be a factor. But at the same point in time, if somebody wanted their loved one to come home, there's no reason why they couldn't be, okay. Generally speaking. So, I mean, yeah, there would be rare circumstances where it might not be possible. But, you know, if it is and people want it, then that's what we do.
And it doesn't necessarily have to be an open coffin either. I mean, like we had Jeff's coffin open initially, and then we have to make the decision to close the coffin kind of on the Friday morning. So, you know, you can bring them home and not necessarily have the coffin open if that's something that you'd also like to do. It doesn't have to be an open coffin.
My dad always said that. He was like, your mother would kill me if she knew how many people had seen her. And I think because she died suddenly, like we felt we had to. Like my grandmother was alive at the time, my dad's mum.
Closure.
And and my grandmother had seen her a few days before. And she's like, unless I had seen her, I never would have believed. So you hear of people saying things like that. But, you know, like honestly, like we'd all be dead. Like if she knew that people had seen her. and that's again, having these conversations, knowing what people would want, etc. Stuart, back to kind of your role and your job as a funeral director.
Sure.
Do you do embalming, or is that a specific person that comes in and does that?
Yeah, so there's a specific person who does that. I mean, pretty much every other role that you could imagine for our work, I do. But we have people who are completely trained in that sort of work. And, you know, in some companies, they have people who, you know, work there full time. We have somebody who is a freelance embalmer who basically not only works for ourselves, but works for a few other funeral firms. Mm-hmm. It's much more a skilled profession than maybe people might give it credit for, but there's a lot to it.
It's like a medical, what's the qualification around it, do you know? Or like,
so there is a qualification that you can get here in Ireland, but you know, there's a gentleman out in Mayo who does provide training, and I think there's another service in Athy that also does it. But a lot of people traditionally used to go to the UK to do their training. And it is like there's a lot to understanding, you know, what has to be done in the course of embalming.
Yeah.
But in many cases, embalming now also probably incorporates the sort of the appearance of somebody. So if somebody wants their hair or makeup done, for example, that kind of comes under their remit. Generally speaking, if somebody comes into our care, we'd always ask for a photo of that person to make sure that, even if it was a man, you know, if they wear their hair a certain way, that, you know, when the family sees them, that person looks like themselves. Because even small things like that can be
it's so important. Yeah.
Yeah. And similarly too, I mean, and I think there's another almost maybe a misconception with the embalming side of things as well, is that, you know, there's always going to be a lot of makeup used. And I don't know why that necessarily exists. But I mean, generally speaking, if somebody was of the mind that in their lifetime they didn't wear makeup, then in almost most cases, there would be no need for them to wear any more makeup than normal, you know, when they've passed. So, yeah, it's one of the things I always find interesting about when people think of
we do say that, don't we? I think I always find it interesting when people say, oh, they look great, like they look just like themselves. And no matter who it is, I'm always like, no, they don't. They look dead.
they look dead.
Awful.
That's fair enough as well.
Like, it's just, I don't know if it's something that people just have to feel, they have to say it around the coffin to be
it's
like,
an Irish thing.
They look amazing. You're like, she'd sit up and start talking to
you.
I know
they
she
look
wouldn't.
Great with the head tilt.
Yeah.
The head tilt.
I do generally think there are folks who probably gain, because I do believe it myself, that there's a benefit to be gained from viewing the person after they have died. I feel that there's something sort of within our own psyche that we kind of almost need to see the person to kind of have that closure.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, so that's something that I would feel like if there's ever family funerals for ourselves, you know, I'd always want to see the person when they've been, you know, dressed and laid out in their coffin, because I feel it's an important part of the funeral process.
And that made it really tough for Jeff's friend, because he had gone on holidays to Portugal, like, a week and a half before, and then by the time they came over from the UK to Dublin for the funeral, we had to close the coffin, so they didn't get to see him.
Oh,
so it was really hard for some of them to actually believe that, like, he wasn't just still on holidays, like that there was, you know, it is definitely a closure thing as well.
Yeah, it's something a lot of people, I'm sure, find incredibly difficult to see someone. But I'm with the two of you. I think you need to see it to believe it sometimes. But look, we're all different, and I completely respect people who feel that they just can't do it. Stuart, I always really admire, I've seen you at work, and I think you're so professional and incredible what you do. I'm always blown away by the people who work at funeral homes, just how composed they are, how stoic they are. I'm sure there has been moments in your career that you've had to catch your breath and compose yourself. I mean, what do you do in those moments when it's all too much?
I mean, I can give you like my own personal sort of experience. Last year, we actually had a friend of ours who died, and he was a priest. He was actually an elderly guy. He was 85, and I knew him for about 8 years because he retired into the parish, and he became very friendly with the family and very close to us all. And actually, when he died, it was like losing a family member, and I have to say that was probably one of the few times I have found the job quite kind of real, in a sense that you can always be once removed from a situation when you're dealing with another person's death. It's as cold as that might sound, because you do it to professionally keep a distance, but when it's somebody that you really care about, it's a little harder to separate the emotion from you know, the situation. Equally, I mean, look, if I've done any funeral of a young person, it's the same sort of feeling. You really have to manage your own emotions. And what I've come to learn is that the best thing I can do for these families who are in this unfortunate situation is to be able to just be there for them and to work for them. Because at the end of the day, it's their loss and not mine. So my job is to make sure that, you know, everything's looked after on their end. And I've figured out over the years how to manage that, I think, for myself, to help do my job as best as I can for these folks.
What do you do?
You're earth angels.
You really are. What do you do when the funeral's over, Stuart? Like, especially if it's been maybe a particularly tough one or a very busy one, it's been an all-consuming few days. Like, I'm well aware that people are always dying, and you're probably going on to the next funeral.
I'd probably go back to the office to take lunch before I go on to possibly arrange another funeral. I mean, that's kind of the nature of our work, is that sometimes there isn't that opportunity to sort of, I suppose,
catch your breath,
dwell on it,
catch your breath, or dwell on anything, which is probably sometimes a good thing. But, you know, it is kind of the nature of our work that, we go away from having looked after a funeral where it might have been quite difficult, but then you go back to the office, you have a bite to eat or a cup of coffee or something like that, and then you might have to go straight back into it again. That frequently is how it is for ourselves, and I'm sure for many of my colleagues within the trade, it's probably a very similar experience.
Have you thought about your own funeral and what you'd like?
Yes, actually, I have. And funny enough, we myself and my sister, who would be a few years younger than myself but works in the business with us, we had a quiet afternoon in the office there one day about a month or two ago, And we actually basically wrote down each other's funerals for each other. So we actually have, as mad as this sounds, we have our own funerals planned. Yeah, we just it was something that we thought we'd do.
No pressure on everyone else now, but don't get Stuart's funeral wrong.
Well, actually, there's no way that they could. I mean, it's down to a T.
Wow.
I mean, but it's funny how it is, though, because we were going through all these things and we were talking about music, which is a particular interest of my own. And I was thinking I was kind of going through a list of songs that I would want to have at my own service. I was saying to my sister, Ali, I said, you know what? If this had been, 10 years ago, I probably would have wanted another 5 or 6 different songs. And it's amazing how things change through life that might alter your kind of, perception or your own interest or things like that. It was kind of funny putting down this sort of list of songs, knowing full well that maybe in 10 years' time, if I look at it again, I'll be like, oh, there's no way I'd have any of these. But it's just the having of the conversation. Because we work within the trade every day, I feel that maybe it's maybe not an easier conversation to have, but we do it because we're familiar with the process, and we kind of know, I know what I would like based off my experience of seeing other funerals. I'd imagine maybe in 10 years time, I'll probably want to change that and do something different.
That's a really good tip, actually, because, you don't think about that you need to maybe have a refresher every couple of years.
And I do have customers who actually come back to me from time to time and have planned their funerals, and maybe they come back and say, well, actually, we're doing this now, or
Stop.
They want to do something a little bit different. Yeah, and there's a lot of people
nowadays. Yeah, we talk about that loads on the live, actually.
Really? Yeah,
and they do pre-plan funerals, because as I said before, with funerals becoming a less taboo subject, people don't feel like they're inviting death, because this is the whole thing. We're not trying to, beckon on death. All we're trying to do is plan for the eventuality of it. And so if we have family or friends left behind to look after things in our wake, then you'd want them to be better prepared and to not feel that they're burdened with everything. Now, some folks are really good at dealing with the sort of, I suppose, the organization of a funeral and going through all of that. And some people need to be kind of involved, so to say. But for many people, it's a hugely naturally emotional thing to take on. And at a time when your kind of emotions are up to 90, your nerves are frozen, you probably can't think straight. So the idea that person might have gone ahead and made those arrangements might just take some of the pressure off, and they can then sort of say, well, look, this is what, my loved one wanted, so we can just make it happen. That's all that needs to be done.
Absolutely. Stuart Collier, Funeral Director at Collier Funeral Services in Bray. An absolute pleasure to have you on the show tonight. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us on.
And Sinead Hingston Green, you are an angel. Thank you so much for being so open, so honest, so you. I absolutely loved this chat. And I presume we can still see that Instagram live back with you and Stuart if we want to. If people want to follow you and more of your story.
Yeah, I'll go and scroll and I'll see where it is. Yeah.
What's your handle on Instagram?
I think it's Sinead Hingston Green.
Sinead, yeah, they'll find you. But in death, you'll find her. Sinead, you're brilliant. Thank you so much for the chat tonight.
I really enjoyed it.
Great to have you. And thank you for getting involved and sending in your texts. There's a lot there about funeral wishes and conversations with family. So thank you so much for getting involved tonight. Thank you for making my first night so much fun. Even though we talked about our funerals, it was just a lot of fun tonight. And I will be back with you again tomorrow night. My name is Lauren O'Sullivan and I cannot wait. Loads more fun coming up tomorrow night. Have a good one.
Nighttime Talk. Call us now on 0818 942 105.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
Hey, it's Trina Mara, and we've just launched a brand new series called Ukrainian Voices in Ireland. Each week, we'll hear from members of the Ukrainian community about how they've found living in Ireland and what life is like with an ongoing war at home. We'll also be highlighting events and ways to help across the series. And if you would like to take part or support in any way, just email trina.mara@classichits.ie. Ukrainian Voices in Ireland, every week on my show from 10 till 2. And you can also catch up with our podcast. Just search Ireland's Classic Hits Ukrainian Voices.
A sound and vision initiative funded by Comisión na Meán with the television licence fee.
Ireland's Classic Hits Radio.
All aboard for the Cove Heritage Centre Tour.
Take a historic trip back in time and visit our ancestors from the past. For more than 25 years, we've been telling the emigrant story. So come and join the journey, follow the footsteps of our ancient ancestors, and feel history come alive. See our opening times and plan your visit at coveheritage.com. Cove Heritage Centre, a highlight of Ireland's ancient East.
The Mallow Garden Festival, one of Ireland's largest home and garden festivals, takes place on May 24th, 25th and 26th.
There's over 200 exhibitors, 25 super show gardens, free gardening seminars and